Okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome. Thank you. Please make yourselves comfortable. I hope it's nice and cool in here for you. The library have turned their air conditioning down as much as they possibly can. I would like to welcome you to the second of 307 Net Radio's candidate forums. I do apologise for delaying the City Council and Mayor candidate forums. The City Council candidates have been hard to corral well enough to have a really good forum, so I'm going to postpone that. I will do forums with the four who go through to the general election, but I will also feature any candidate who would like to on the website in a written form, and so you can go back and check on them to help inform your vote. Also for the Mayor, Shane Schrader, our incumbent candidate, was called away due to an unbelievable family tragedy, and it's unfair to kind of have him rush back and make him do this for this. And also I've not been able to reach Travis Kaufman. He's not made himself available, so I'm not going to pursue that tonight, but I will pay attention to it and I will bring you coverage. I said this last night, so I apologise if I'm repeating myself, but I've been in Buffalo 20 years, but I am told that my British accent remains pretty strong. I don't have an accent, you do, by the way. Many people, especially when they're just listening, find it hard to completely understand me. I know this is true, as drive-up windows really do struggle to deliver me what I think I've ordered. So, as a result, you won't hear me talk much on 307 Net Radio. Anyway, before we get going, I'd like to especially thank Johnson County Library again, not only for hosting these events, but also for so generously allowing 307 Net Radio to use their space as a recording studio and in general meeting and planning spot. So thank you. Thank you to Steve and his team for their gracious hosting. Also special thanks again to Marcy Schuler, who moderated last night, and to Erin Palmer, who is moderating this evening, for their amazing contribution to this endeavour. Many of you know that it was fairly recently that I took over 307 Net Radio from the visionary and ultra-resilient Mark Bentley. Mark, here tonight, is beating all the odds in his recovery from a serious pneumonia that tried very hard indeed to take him from us. Mark, it's great to see you again, and it's particularly lovely to see you, Eileen. You're magnificent. It was Mark's brilliant vision that spawned 307 Net Radio, and I'm grateful and privileged that he has passed it along to me. This work really does truly bring me back to the beginning of my career. It's a full circle for me. So what Mark did was that he conceived of a way of creating a platform where people can quickly and easily find out more about issues and decisions that are being made locally and that affect us all. It really lifts the lid on what's happening in our community. So whether it be a local government meeting or an interview with a community leader on an issue, you'll get to hear it unedited and unfiltered on demand, so at your convenience, whenever and wherever suits you, from your phone, your tablet or your computer. And tonight will be the same. We'll be posting all the audio and it will be available to you shortly for you to dip in and consume and listen at your convenience. So if you can't get to go to a meeting or visit with a particular community leader, 307 Net Radio really is the place to keep aware and informed of what's happening in Johnson County. This is the place where you'll get informed, and it's the opportunity I really want to be delivering information that then people get to make up their own minds for themselves. So then you decide what you think about it and whether you want to act or not and how you want to act. So I'd like to draw your attention to our revamped website at 307netradio.com. Right now we're very much focused on election coverage, and we'll do so right the way through the general election. But I see the website as being an information platform, and we'll also be exploring more issues and having more conversations about challenges and happenings in our community. So I encourage you to drop in regularly. For me right now it's a bit like drinking water from a fire hose, but I'm doing my best, and I would love to hear anything that you would like to know more about or that you have something you would like to share in the community could benefit from hearing. So please get in touch with me. Anyway, without more ado, Let's move on to the business in hand, tonight's forums, getting to meet the candidates. The purpose of these forums is very simple in my view. It's to help you, voters, make informed choices when you go to the ballot on August the 16th, to help you understand more about these candidates and their experiences and their approach relevant to the office they seek and whether they're actually the right person for the position. Think of them as a sort of form of a job interview. That's what this tonight is really. It's like a job interview for your candidate. So before we move on, I'd just like to kind of point out some sort of terms and conditions of engagement, format and rules for the forum. The running tonight order tonight will be House District 40 candidates, followed afterwards by the county commissioners. There'll be a short break in between. Candidates, as you will notice, are seated in alphabetical order at the table, and Erin Palmer will be asking questions and moderating the answers. Candidates will be asked the same questions with timed answers in varying order, so each will get a chance to answer their question first. Candidates, I encourage you to be specific as possible with your answers rather than talk in generalities. We're really trying to understand detail tonight. And you will be given a signal when you have 30 seconds left, and again when your time is up. I know it can be distracting. Please be respectful of the time limit. It's difficult to cut you off. Speaking of being respectful, please, both candidates and audience, don't interrupt, or worse still, heckle. Anyone behaving or speaking in a discourteous or disrespectful way will not be tolerated, and I will have to ask you to leave. Candidates will have the opportunity to make an opening statement. Following that, all the candidates will have a minute or so for rebuttal or additional comment from anything they may have heard or want to add. And following that, there will be a few minutes for you to make a closing statement. I just encourage you, while we have many people in the room, most people who are going to be hearing this will be listening on audio, so we will be introducing you, and bear that in mind as you participate. And at the end of the question period, we'll have a few minutes to take questions from the audience. So if you haven't heard something you want an answer to, you will have a few moments to ask that question. So without more ado, I'd like to introduce Barry Crago and Richard Tass, your candidates for House District 40.
Gentlemen, good evening.
Good evening.
Are you ready to go? Okay. We'll get started. First of all, we're going to offer you a chance for opening statements, and this is your chance to tell the voters about yourself and whatever you would like them to know. We'll start with Barry Crago. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Aaron. So my name is Barry Crago, and I'm a Republican running for House District 40. And before I get started on me, I'd just like to thank 307 Net Radio for putting this event on. It's a great opportunity to get together with the voters and let the voters have a chance to get together with us, ask questions, and get to know more about us and kind of see where we stand on the issues and what our general ideals are. Thanks to the voters, the constituency, for being here tonight. It's a packed room. It's great to see you all here, and thanks for your interest in what's going on in our county, in our state, and in our country. A little bit about myself and my family. I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a rancher, I'm a lawyer. I have a great family. My wife, Kristen, is in the back. She's the principal at the Buffalo Christian Academy. I have two wonderful daughters, Lily and Caroline. Lily's going to be a senior in high school. Caroline's going to be a sophomore, and we're getting close to not having any kids left in the house, so that's going to be really scary for us. And we love following them around. And I'm also honored to have my mother here tonight. She's from South Dakota, which is where I graduated high school and grew up in Belle Fourche. And so she's been over here helping us do a little campaigning. So I'm super glad to have her here, too. I'm a graduate of Casper College. I went on to the University of Wyoming and got my degree in agricultural business. And from there, I went on and got my law degree eventually. And so I've returned. After that, we returned up here, went to my wife's family's ranch, and have been in Johnson County ever since. I feel like I'm here because I love Wyoming, and I love the people of Wyoming, and I think I can do a good job for Wyoming. And we'll get into more details as we go on tonight, but I'm just glad to be here, and thank you.
Okay, Richard Tass, you have 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you, Arnold. I guess first I'd like to repeat the same. We thank 307 for sponsoring this event, because it's really necessary that we get a chance to meet the folks and the folks get to meet us. I was born here in Johnson County, spent all my life here. Both my parents and my grandparents all had homesteads here. So we've been here in Johnson County a long time. I have served in numerous boards over the years, anywhere from the experiment farm in Sheridan as on their board of advisors. I've been on the soil conservation board, the co-op board, the school board, county commissioner here. I spent 2 years in the Army, 1 year in Vietnam, where I served as a motor sergeant in a motor pool of a headquarters company of a maintenance battalion. And that's kind of what I've done. I come back to the ranch here. I did graduate from Johnson County High School. I went to a country school my first 8 grades. I graduated from Casper College, majoring in auto mechanics and agriculture. So that's where I've been. I've been out on the ranch ever since. I married my wife 51 years ago. She sits back here. We have 2 children, 4 grandchildren. So 30 seconds. So that's kind of just a thumbnail of where I've been and what I've done. And it's a pleasure to be here with you folks tonight.
Okay. We can get started with the first question. What we're going to do is we'll give each of you an opportunity to speak first. We're going to start with Mr. Crago with this question. And the first question, access to affordable health care is a significant issue facing many in Wyoming. Only 4 states west of the Mississippi have not expanded Medicaid to lower-income uninsured citizens. Okay. What conditions to expansion are important to consider when Medicaid expansion is discussed? And the question is, where do you stand when it comes to Wyoming providing expanded Medicaid? Mr. Crago, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Aaron. So this is a big issue in Wyoming. It's a very big issue. My first year in the legislature, this particular issue came up, Medicaid expansion. And at that time, the bill, and I don't know if it'll ever get back to this, but the bill at that time provided expanded Medicaid in Wyoming on the condition that the federal government not only pick up 90% of the expansion cost, but then they also pick up additional portions of our underlying current Medicaid costs. At that point in time, the estimates were that was actually expanding Medicaid would actually save Wyoming roughly $17 million a year. I voted for it, and since then I've received, I can't tell you how many calls, emails, whatever, explaining why I should not have done that. It was not a very popular position I took in our district at that point in time. And so sitting here tonight, I don't know where exactly I stand on that particular issue. I think it's going to depend on how the bill comes up and what the voters feel, and me connecting with the voters and seeing where you stand, what do you want me to do? Because I also received a lot of information from people positive about it beforehand. Not much after, but you know, there were people in the community that reached out to me and said, yeah, we appreciate you voted yes on that. It was a very controversial. It passed by 2 votes, and then it died in the Senate, and so it didn't go anywhere. You know, I think as far as what conditions would have to be on it, it would have, let me back up one other thing. The other great thing about the bill that hasn't really been talked about, and one of the things that I've explained to voters that have called me about it is, well, the federal government's going to just tease us into this, and then we're going to sign up for Medicaid expansion, and then, poof, they're just going to disappear and leave Wyoming packing the water on that. And I said, the great thing about that particular bill is it had a drop-dead clause. So if the federal government ever tried to back out of the Medicaid expansion ceased to exist in Wyoming, and we as voters, as the legislature, voters, et cetera, did not have to actually vote on that. It just disappeared. And so at the time, one of the reasons I voted for it is in my first year in the legislature, we were scrambling to find money. Wyoming was broke. We were cutting budget. It was a supplemental budget year, so we were cutting the previous budget by $500 million, and that was one thing everybody thought, well, that would be helpful to do. And so that was one of the reasons. But as far as conditions, I think it would have to include something like that where the federal government could not leave us holding the bag for millions and millions of dollars. That being said, I honestly don't know where I would end up voting on it today, because there were a lot of voters who did not appreciate that vote, and I say I listen to the voters, and so that's my job. And so at the end of the day, I don't know. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Tass, same question. I'll repeat it. Where do you stand when it comes to Wyoming providing expanded Medicaid? And you have 3 minutes.
I have always opposed Medicare expansion. It is another one of those government programs that the federal government is going to come and be our big savior and start a new program, and in a few years, like what they do, they go away, and they, any way you cut it, the state of Wyoming gets cut or gets on the hook for all the extra money. And we already spend over half of our budget on school, on education, the state's money. We can't afford to expand the Medicaid expansion and then turn around and pick up all the medical care costs. On top of that, I really oppose turning our health care over to a federal or to any bureaucracy that is going to have a committee that decides what kind of health care you get or I get. I'm getting too old. They're not going to buy me a new knee or whatever. We heard this a while back. Take an aspirin and go home. That came from Obama. I oppose Medicaid expansion for that simple reason. The more of our freedoms and the more of our lives that we turn over to government is a bad, bad deal.
Okay. We'll move on to question number 2, and we'll start with Mr. Tass this time. Wyoming has the dismal distinction of leading the nation in death by suicide per capita. The mental health challenges facing Johnson County are increasing, and professionals agree this is a complex issue to address, which includes suicides, substance abuse, and subsequent challenges for law enforcement. What is the role of the legislature in addressing mental health issues? What is appropriate in Wyoming, which is a state with a small population but a large geographical area? What is your agenda for tackling the issue created by growing instances of poor mental health in our community? Mr. Tass, you have 3 minutes.
Oh, I wish that was a simple answer. It isn't. First off, I want to address drug problems. Marijuana, the drugs that are coming into the state, there's been a movement to try to legalize marijuana and other drugs, which contributes immensely to the mental health of our young people and so on. So I oppose legalizing any of those drugs, marijuana, any of it. Those are gateway drugs. They almost always lead to others. Now, suicide prevention, I don't know how you talk your way out of that program or out of those deals. I've experienced it in my own family. It is a terrible, terrible situation that a person gets in. We definitely need medical help or help that would curtail some of that. I think we have some professionals that work that way. We do need to support that. It is a bad problem, and sitting here in front of you folks, I'm sorry I don't have the magic answer. It needs a lot more work done on it.
Okay. Mr. Crago, same question, I'll repeat it. What is your agenda for tackling the issues created by growing instances of poor mental health in our community. You have 3 minutes.
Thanks, Aaron. So first thing we can do as a legislature is divert the resources necessary to effect change. Right now, there are not enough treatment facilities in Wyoming to help the people who really need help. The Wyoming legislature can provide the money to make that happen. We just need to do it. We need to figure out a plan. Where do these places go? Where is the optimal locations for these facilities? How do we staff them? And where do we get the money to make it happen? But we can make it happen. We just got to do it. We don't have a choice anymore. It's a very big problem in Wyoming. We all know that. It's a very big problem in Johnson County, Sheridan County, a lot of our rural counties, and we need to do something about it. For example, when they were considering all of the ARPA money and where it would go, I made lots of calls to my friends on appropriations and said, I told them, we need to divert some of that money to treatment facilities. It has to be spent on mental health. And so it was. And so you keep hearing this talk about a wing of the hospital in Sheridan being set aside for mental health. That's part of the ARPA money. That's where that money's coming from, and that's what it's going to be used for. We have to be creative and keep finding places to get that money. It doesn't take hundreds of millions of dollars. It just takes a little bit here and a little bit there, and we can make a big difference. And so that's my agenda. Keep finding places where we can make a difference in little places and get the money necessary to get the facilities, because that's really the problem. And we see that at the county level and the county attorney's office, and law enforcement sees this day in and day out. We have people that come in that need Title 25 help, and we can't get it. There is not a bed for them to go to. And so they end up staying the night in jail or in the hospital, neither of which are set up for those types of circumstances. We have to find places that allow these people to get the treatment they need, and then we need to keep following up with that. And that requires people on the ground in the communities doing that job, and we don't have enough people. We have people. We just don't have enough of them, and so we just got to find the money to make that happen.
Okay. Follow-up, Barry. ARPA. Please explain what that is. There might be people that don't know what ARPA is.
Right. So ARPA, thank you. Sorry. Should have been more specific, as Kate asked me to be. ARPA was the federal money that came in, and the state had a big pool of this money, and they have to spend it on certain things. And so ARPA was just the American Recovery Plan Act, and so that was what the big, huge block grant of money came to the state of Wyoming, and it could be spent on certain things in certain parameters, healthcare being one of them. And so that's why some of that money was able to be diverted to hospitals, and in this case, hopefully for an enhanced, mental health facility in Sheridan.
Thank you. Okay. Question 3. We will start with Mr. Crago this time. Many people feel that Wyoming's ability to finance education using past revenue sources are not sustainable in the long run because these mineral revenue streams are volatile, over time, and they also may be shrinking over the long term. What ideas do you have or favor for future revenue sources to fund education in the state? And we'll start with Mr. Crago. You have 3 minutes.
All right. Thanks, Aaron. So I'm not sure I believe that all of our current funding models are antiquated or are no longer going to work. I think it's always good to think about diversification and find other ways to raise money for education. But a couple things I would say. One, right now we're in a great uptick in the oil, gas, and coal industry. Education is going to be well funded for the next 5 to 6 years. We're not going to be, by all estimates, we're not going to be worried about education funding right away. The problem with education funding, as with the oil and gas industry and mineral industry in general, is it's cyclical. So we have highs and we have lows and we have highs and we have lows. We need to figure out a better way to budget. We need to figure out a way to make our line like this straight instead of up and down constantly, and get our education funding model more in line with that. Not just our education funding model, but our entire state budget on more of a straight line. It'd make everything so much easier if we could do that instead of going through the booms and busts and wondering how we're going to pay our bills one year, and then the next year wondering how we're going to spend all our money. And so I think we just need to do some more long-range planning and that would roll up in with education. And so as far as ideas of what we could do to add to that, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, all that, you know, requires raising taxes. And I'm not a huge proponent of that. I don't really necessarily want to go raise taxes. And what I've always said about the tax system in general in Wyoming is if we're going to change it, we have to change it as a whole. We can't, you know, we see all these bills that come in every year at the legislature and they attack a little piece here or a little piece here. We want to cut here, raise here. And most of those doesn't solve our problems one way or the other. If we're going to change our tax system, we need to change it as a whole. We need to make wholesale change to the tax system and do it over the course of a couple of sessions, not try to do it in 1 year. We need to plan it out and say, okay, if we do this, how is this going to affect us 5 years from now? How is this going to affect us 10 years from now? Not just say we need to cut taxes or we need to raise taxes. We need to have a plan. And I think part of that problem is it's really hard to do that because the legislature changes so much every year. And so you never know who your colleagues are going to be and how you're going to be able to maneuver through that. And so it becomes difficult to do long-range planning in the state legislature. That's just the nature of the beast. But I think we need to figure out how to do that and work with our colleagues and just get a plan done to where we can address education funding long-term as well as our state budget rolled into that.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Tass, same question, I'll repeat it. What ideas do you have or favor for future revenue sources to fund education in the state? You have 3 minutes.
Thank you for that question. I guess I'm not as worried about our revenue. The state has got plenty of money coming in. We need to cut the tax and cut the spending. If you did a little math on the newspaper here the other day, they said they were, I don't know how many million they were spending, going to budget here in Johns County school system. But it turns out that it's right at that $19,000 per student, which is kind of the state average. And that is the highest in the whole country for money spent on students. If you look deeper in that $20,000 or per student, a very small amount of that is ending up in the school classroom. Our teachers are not overpaid. There is money spent all over the state that needs to be cut back. Our school funding is based on a court case said that you had to have equal funding. Well, the state takes a bucket of money and you hand it to the individual school districts on the prescribed formula, and the state doesn't have any recourse on how that money is spent. I don't think the state should have. That is up to your school board. But there has to be it. We have to address that $20,000 per student. Somehow or another, too much of it's going into administration. Too much of it is, spent everywhere. So my concern on the schools isn't we're not taxing enough. It is that we're not spending the money in the right places, and we're spending too much money on the school system. And with that kind of spending, we ought to have the highest graduation rates in the country. Our graduation rates are not good. Our students, the dropout is bad. The greater school is not producing what that money should be buying. So there's all kinds of problems there. I am certainly not in favor of looking for more taxes to spend in this area. We need to look at better ways to spend the money that we have.
Okay, thank you. Question 4, we will start with Mr. Tass this time. And property taxpayers are feeling the impact of sharp hikes in rates this year. It is expected that this trend will continue. What do you propose as the correct means to address this? Specifically, what can be done to alleviate the taxpayers' burden to an affordable and sustainable rate, yet still provide the necessary funding to ensure infrastructure and services Okay. How long would you envision this would take to come into effect? Okay. Now, the question is, what are you going to do to relieve the burden of skyrocketing property taxes? Mr. Tass, you have 3 minutes.
Long introduction. Okay, what first off needs to be done is, and it should be a fairly simple maneuver, is cap the taxes where they are. That ought to be really simple to do, so that everybody, you know, the amount of tax increase this year was terrible. They're talking 30-40%, and they're saying next year it'll be even more than that. People cannot afford that. We're going to tax people out of their homes. This is a terrible, serious thing. It's more serious than your school, all the other issues, in my opinion. We have to address this. You have to stop the increase. Then I would propose, and some of the other followers that I've talked to, we're talking about acquisition. We should pass and go back, get rid of neighborhood tax evaluation that is most unfair. It has been unfair forever. When I was in the legislature 4 years ago, I brought a bill that would have capped, and we tried to stop the increase, at least on the senior citizen. I got it through the committee process, got it out on the House floor, where they defeated it. Nothing has been accomplished since then. Mr. Grego has not, from what I can find, has not sponsored or co-sponsored any bill to reduce the taxes on people. Everybody in our government there throw their hands up and say, man, we are so surprised. These guys have been involved in the collecting taxes. They know your property values have been going up. Common sense is, when property values go up, your taxes are going up. Your incomes are not. My Social Security darn sure isn't. And so we've wasted 2 years without addressing the problem. 4 years ago, I tried. We sat there. Nothing has been accomplished. And we needed to address this, because we can't afford to move. And it isn't only senior citizens that are going to lose their homes. It's the young families that barely can afford their mortgages that they're paying. Interest rates, the bank told me today, is going to be cost me 6.5% to buy some hay. They can't afford this kind of inflation. So we need to put a cap on it, stop it now, and then soon address this and do away with neighborhood values and get to something that is more common sense acquisition. Roll the taxes back 3 years, use that as a baseline.
Okay, thank you. Barry, same question, I'll repeat it. What are you going to do to relieve the burden of skyrocketing property taxes? 3 minutes.
All right, thank you. So this is not a simple solution. There's nothing simple about this. And unfortunately, that's the case. I wish it was. There's a reason nothing has been done in the legislature. First of all, to really affect the change that everybody's talking about, we have to amend the Constitution. The Constitution, in Article 15, Section 11, this is what it says. All property, except as in this Constitution otherwise provided, shall be uniformly valued at its full value. That's defined as market value. And so the problem is, how do we get around that? First of all, we have to get a two-thirds majority in both chambers of the legislature to pass a constitutional amendment through the legislature. Would not have happened in the last couple years. There was actually a bill that came through to limit the cap. Couldn't even make it past the floor, much less get two-thirds of a vote. There were efforts. I don't think anyone really saw this coming, and me included, and you know, maybe I should have, but I didn't. But I do know what we can do to fix it. And what that is A, if we're going to fix it long term, we have to get a constitutional amendment. And until everybody received the amount of tax increases they received this time around, there would not have been enough political clout to make it happen in the legislature. There will be now. Everybody is receiving the same calls at their office that I am. What are you going to do about this? How are you going to fix our taxes? We now have the impetus to actually effect change in the statute and in the Constitution. One of your comments, Aaron, or I guess preamble to your question was, how long is this going to take? Well, long term, it's going to probably take 2 years because we can't get anything on the ballot until the following. It takes 2 years. It's got to be on a general election for a ballot. So we'll get there. In the meantime, I think there are some things we can do. And, you know, we can talk about even the caps based on some, you know, we've requested opinions from LSO, our lawyers at the legislature. Even a cap requires a constitutional amendment. And so that we're going to have to go down that road. But what we can do is we can talk about refund programs, which I voted for the last time. We fully funded the refund state refund program. There are ways for people to alleviate, in the short term, their tax burden. You can go to the state. There are other programs that we could institute at a local level. There's things we can do in the short term. They just all require money. And hopefully we're in a good enough position as a state that we can do that, alleviate, help our citizens in the short term while we work on the long-term solution, which is going to take more than one or two sessions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, we have one final question. Prior to 2020, Wyoming was the seventh slowest growing state in the nation, according to the Wyoming Department's Economic Analysis Division, when 12,000 more people left Wyoming than moved in during that period. However, COVID-19 ushered in a sharp reversal to that trend. It is unclear as to whether or how this will continue, which makes planning for the short, medium, and long term especially difficult. The question, and it's a two-parter, so I'm going to let you answer the first one, and then I'll follow up. What are your opinions on growth, and how should it be approached? Mr. Crago, you have 3 minutes. But keep in mind, I have a follow-up.
Yes, sir. So, we love Wyoming. All of us that live here love Wyoming, and we want to keep it the way it is. But I think it's inevitable that we are not going to always be able to do that because we live in the greatest place in America. Everybody wants to come here. And so we have to deal with it one way or the other. And I'm not necessarily excited about growth, to be honest with you. I mean, I think as far as growing our economy and figuring out ways to diversify our tax base, we have to think in those terms, and we have to be willing to accept growth. But we don't necessarily have to be excited about it. And that's probably where I am. Is I like the 575,000 people that live here, and I think we're just fine. But that's not where we're going to be long term. And so those of us that live here and love Wyoming and love what it is, we have to be here and be ready to step up to the plate, help develop this growth in a way that keeps Wyoming as much as possible, keeps it to be Wyoming. And we can't just sit on the sidelines. We got to get in the middle of it and really help lead that growth in ways that benefit the state, benefit its citizens, and benefit our culture, our way of life, etc. And so that's sort of where I stand. I know that's kind of a middle-of-the-road answer, but that's how I feel about it.
Okay, the follow-up is, what is your opinion on low taxes and the effects it has on economic growth and vitality? And you have about a minute.
So, I think low taxes as far as creating a business environment is very helpful. The problem with our tax system, and this is, you know, for every person that comes to Wyoming, we actually... And this is what the statistics bear out. We actually lose money because we as citizens, because our tax system is set up, we don't cover our own expenses as far as paying taxes. That's just for years, and that, I'm talking about all of state government, not necessarily county government because we do at that level, but we're talking state government. The oil, gas, mineral industry paid the majority of our taxes and have for over 50 years. And so those low taxes are great to get businesses here, but those businesses don't really provide any tax base other than to provide jobs. And people are able to get good jobs in Wyoming, but those individual citizens also don't cover the tax burden created by them. Schools, roads, whatever we're talking about, police departments, sheriff's office, etc. And so, you know, I'm okay with that tax system, but long term, if we end up with millions of people in Wyoming, I don't know how that works out for us. Time will bear that out.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Tass, same question, I'll repeat them. First one is, what are your opinions on growth and how should it be approached? And the follow-up, you have 3 minutes.
Well, that's a tough one, too, because we all like our little world. We always want all the elbow room we can. I'm definitely not afraid of, do not encourage or would not be in favor of a lot of zoning laws that are going to take away private property from people who have their own. But I go back to taxes. We need to have a fair tax system for people's homes that would keep from pushing the local people that we have here already out of their homes so the millionaires can come in and buy up these homes that we are taxing people out of. So we've really got to address the tax issue, keep the taxes lower like they were, particularly for our resident. I don't think there's any way that we can fence people out. That would be really fun, but that is not the way that's just not the way we're set up, you know. My grandparents came here and the Indians didn't like that. So, you know, that's where we are. Our state is going to grow, and we need to do it in an orderly manner as best we can. I really worry about these half-acre subdivisions that are going in where the well is here, sewer's there, well's there. That's going to be a health hazard. There should be some rules, controls on that, and I believe there is. Why they are not totally enforced so that you don't have that, I don't know. But, we don't have to welcome everybody with open arms, but we do. So that's kind of where I am.
Okay. The follow-up. You have about a minute. What is your opinion on low taxes and its effect on economic growth and vitality?
Well, no doubt, our low taxes, we don't have a state income tax, which I think is a good thing. Our low property taxes compared to surrounding states. Certainly as a magnet to bringing people here, our clean air, our environment, our mountains, our wildlife. But that's our benefit, and I don't think you can lock other people out from it. We have to are going to end up sharing whether we like it or not, because that's the country, that's the way we live.
Okay. Want me to address this, or do you want to? Okay. We're into rebuttals and specific additional comments, so I'll explain. You've heard your opponents speak, each other speak. If there are any specific points that you would like to address or remark upon, this is your opportunity to do so. And you don't have to, just if you would like to rebut. Please be specific, and then we'll move on to the closing statements afterwards. Okay? We're going to start with, go alphabetical. Mr. Crago, you have 2 minutes if you would like.
Thanks, Aaron. I actually don't have anything to rebut about what Richard has said tonight, other than to just, you know, I appreciate the fact that he's running, and it takes a lot of courage to get and run for these offices, and it's not always fun. And whoever's running for all the next offices that's come up here, we need to treat each other with civility and have these hard discussions, have these debates, find out where everybody stands. And I just wanted to say I really appreciate that he's stepped up to the plate, is willing to serve you all the people of House District 40, and serve the state of Wyoming, because at the end of the day, it's not a well-paying job, and you're doing it. He obviously loves all of you, loves the state, and loves Johnson County. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Tass, same thing. If you'd like to rebut or whatever, you have 2 minutes.
No, I don't have a whole lot. Mr. Crago has been fair on this campaign. I feel there has been a lack of things accomplished down in Cheyenne. It's kind of a fun thing to listen to the folks last night. They were all talking nice and realizing that they have to work with and serve you folks, and talking about getting along with people. You go down to Cheyenne, it's a whole different side of the coin. You don't go down there to be nice. You don't go down there to get along. You got to speak up. There's some really hard discussions that are kind of fun debates, if you want, like to get in and argue, and you lose most of them, you win a few. And when we were debating Casper over the soldier's home up here, the nursing facility, Casper was really dug in with wanting that facility down there alongside of their cemetery. I was able to talk on the House floor, talk about having the facility up here on the hilltop looking down at the creek, and the benefit it would be to the veterans who had problems looking out the door and seeing the deer in the creek and not looking out the door and seeing the cemetery. So it was interesting debates down there. You have to get up and really stand up and argue with them, and not that I enjoy fighting, but it was a fun experience. Thank you.
Okay. Closing statements, gentlemen. This is your opportunity to speak to the voters in Johnson County. And we'll start with the incumbent first. Mr. Crago, you have 2 minutes. You can address the voters.
Thanks, Aaron. So what I would say is over the last 2 years, I've worked really hard to try to figure out what matters to all of you. And I've tried to solve problems. When I ran 2 years ago, I didn't run on any particular policies. I didn't say I was going to solve this particular problem or I was going to solve this particular problem. I just said I was going to solve your problems. And I think I've tried really hard to do that. And part of that for me, and this is probably where I differ from Mr. Tass a little bit, is I actually think you have to build relationships in Cheyenne if you're going to get something done. You have to get to know everyone. You don't have to vote with them. You don't even have to like them. But you have to be able to talk to them. You have to be able to go behind the door and say, hey, what's your deal on this? Why do you feel this way? What can I do to convince you to vote this way? You have to earn people's trust, and you have to build relationships. You cannot be their enemy. You can have the most heated discussion you want on the floor or in a committee room, but you should be able to, when you leave that spot, be able to have a friendly conversation with them about anything. And I've done that. That's what I've tried really hard to do. I've gone down there and tried to get to know people so that when I need their vote or I need their help, I got it. And because of that, we were able to do some pretty big things over the last couple years. One of them was we fixed the ad valorem problem in this, really for our county. We have a taxpayer in our county who owes the county nearly $30 million, and we had no tools to go collect that. We'll never have that problem again. We fixed that. We kept the rest of the state from cutting up Johnson and Sheridan County during redistricting. There were plans that wanted to send half of Johnson County over the mountain. There was a plan that wanted to send a good portion of Sheridan County to Campbell County. I was able to keep that from happening. We got to keep our district whole. And that was because we had built the relationships. People, when I told them we could make it happen, it happened. And so I'm really proud of the fact that I've taken the time to get to know people, build those relationships, and earn people's trust. Because without it, you're not going to be able to accomplish anything in Cheyenne, not one thing, other than to upset people. And that's not why we're there. I'm there to solve problems for all of you. If reelected, I'll keep doing that. My name's Barry Crago, and I'm running for House District 40. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Tass, here's your opportunity to speak to the voters one last time. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you very much. Again, thanks for sponsoring this debate. Get a chance to talk to you folks. Yes, I need your vote. I went down there 4 years ago. I worked real hard to try to represent you folks and tried to answer a lot of the emails, and you do get a ton of emails. And while I was down there, I did build a coalition with the real conservative wing in the House down there. Right now, today, the conservatives are outnumbered by probably only 3-4 votes on a lot of conservative measures, and we've lost those votes. And the people that I have made friends with, worked with, are the more conservative folks down there, and we need to go down there and work on that end of it, because this tax and spend that has been going on with the legislature, we need to shut that down and quit talking about raising taxes and figure out how we can cut spending. We tried, when I was down there, one of the fellows brought a bill to cut, I think it was a 0.5% across the board on the state budget, and we lost that by about 3 votes. And so we need more conservative people to represent you folks down there, and I will do my best to do that if I'm fortunate enough to have you send me back down there. So thank you very much for this opportunity, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for your full answers. We now have a brief period for some questions, if there are any questions from the audience. So, would you like to ask a question?
You're both ranchers, and I know you're aware of this corner crossing thing. Can you come up with a solution that would be acceptable to the ranching community and the state of Wyoming, the rest of the state of Wyoming, for using public land that's been impounded?
Mr. Tass, would you like to go first?
I, as most of you know, I am a strong personal property. I think it's yours and you have to. The corner crossing is really right on the edge of whether they encroach on personal property or not. I do not think that. Let me back up. Where the problem lies is with the federal government, the state government. It is their responsibility to provide access. And to condemn your way across your personal property, I'm totally against that. I think there's a way. We did it while I was down there with some state lands that were isolated out in the middle of some private property, and they traded and moved that state land up against another state land that had access, and so they still had the same access to the same number of acres. There is nothing that would prevent the Bureau of Land Management or any of those state agencies to say, okay, to the rancher, we'll give you 5 acres if you give us one. That will make corner crossing where people can cross. The government is hiding behind people and personal property. They're making the rancher fight you sportsmen, which is totally wrong. We're sportsmen ourselves. But in town, you won't want the bicycle running across the corner of your property here. Now, they say, well, I can step over that corner. Yeah, you can, but you can't drag an elk over that corner. Okay, we can build it so a four-wheeler can go over, maybe a motorcycle, four-wheeler. That's fine, but it won't get my one-ton pickup across, so now we need a bigger bridge. It has to be settled by negotiation between the BLM, the state, and the private property. I do not think that we need a law at the state level to take away private property. That is the takings. I'm opposed.
Thank you. Mr. Crager, do you have an answer?
Yes, ma'am. So right now, there's a federal court case going on. It's in Casper. And I think that's going to give us an answer. I don't know if we're going to like the answer. We'll see what it is. And so we'll figure out what the court says, and then we'll go from there, whether they say it's legal or illegal. Here's what I say. Money solves all sorts of problems. I mean, I think we can, one of the things we could look at, is, and Richard alluded to this, is figuring out ways for access, talking to the ranchers, figuring out the solution, because I'm a big proponent of public land access. I don't want to keep people from getting to public land. But like Richard, I am also a proponent of private property rights. We have to protect both those interests. And there's a way to, for example, last year we voted on a bill that raised the conservation stamp price. Everybody probably realizes that. All that money is supposed to go to paying for access. That money was set aside for this exact reason, and so we can increase access to public property. And that was one of the reasons I voted for that, because it is going to allow sportsmen to have more access to public property, more access to hunting, fishing, outdoor recreation, etc. And so as that pot of money builds, we'll be able to buy more and more access from the private landowners who are willing to work with on this issue. It's not, I mean, most of us, and I'm sure Richard would say the same, look, if we can help, we'll be helpful. We want to. We just, on the other side of that coin is you also have to protect your private property rights. It becomes a very slippery slope. If we say, oh, you can cross here, well then how about cross here? How about cross here? And so we just have to protect that. I think money solves the problem. I don't want to raise taxes to do that, but I think the pool of money that's been set aside through the conservation stamp, that was the intent of that, and I think it should be helpful.
Thank you.
Does anybody else have a question they would like answered by our candidates? No? Well, thank you very much indeed for coming and attending and participating so fully. We really appreciate that. We'll take a short break, stretch your legs, have a drink, and then we'll reconvene for our county commissioner candidates.